Hi, this is Ash Alder with the Wizard's Respite. This is the Wizard Respite Sanctorum, where we talk about TTRPGs that we love, that we know, and pretty much anything else game-related, nerd-related that pops into our heads as the night unfolds. I'm here with Zachariah from Old Man Gaming. Zach.
Hi, I'm Zachariah from Old Man Gaming. I'm super excited to be here. Super excited to talk about this game. And I love this pod. I just want to say, I love this podcast. This is one of my most fun podcasts to do. It's very easy. There's not a ton of back end editing. It's just a nice chill time. I also never feel like I have to get crazy and rant. If anybody watches this who also watches the gaming podcast, it's a very different Zach. You're seeing on the screen. So yeah.
TTRPGs are like more relaxing, I think, in some ways. It's a more
Yes.
relaxing space.
Well, and the thing is when you get into, I mean, I think TTRPGs have some of that. Not to get into the digression super early, but I think TTRPGs do have some back end. Like if you really get into the shit stuff, like
Oh,
the
sure,
big
yeah.
problem with my podcast when I do for gaming, which is a horrible gaming podcast every Wednesday, stealth plug. And basically what it we get into the news, the backstories, all of that stuff, and you get into all sorts of terrible like human rights violations and terrible shit
Oh,
going on
boy.
in game. Like gaming is like gaming games are fun, but on a corporate level it makes more money than the movie, music and TV industries combined. That's how much gaming brings in. But
I did not know that.
it has probably one-fourth the regulation of any of those because it's the Wild West. Nobody touches it, and everybody thinks of it as just like toys. So you end up with just these mega corporations with absolutely no regulations, whatever, just buying and selling people. Like it's just terrible. It's terrible, and that's what we get into that ends up like causing all the Zach rants from that show. And while I am sure that with TTRPGs there is some of that stuff, I know there's that some of that stuff because of Wizards already. We've seen some of that
Right.
stuff with Hasbro and the OGL and some of their weird reverse racism comments and all that insanity.
Yeah.
But
Pinkertons.
the Pinkertons, yeah. I don't go super in depth on the TTRPG thing, and I think that's the part. Like I always tell people with my gaming podcast, if you listen to it from episode one, you can literally watch the death of hope in a man through the course of like I start doing it, like I'm gonna do this fun gaming podcast at episode one, and then it's episode 198, and it's like, hi, Activision has more sexual misconduct, and this Microsoft owns all the companies, like it's stuff like that. So
Yeah.
this is a lot more fun for me because it's just like we're
Right.
just talking about the systems and just kind of geeking out about it. So
Right.
it's kind of exciting. That, and I put a lot more back end editing into the Horrible Gaming Podcast. So this is nice. We usually do this in one take. It's an easy export. It's nice. It's pleasant.
And like, there's a lot of just like fun back and forth about something that we both just nerd out about. We love this stuff, and that's just a lot of fun. It's a hanging out with a buddy, and basically just shooting the shit. Basically, like just
Well,
having fun and chatting about games.
and I think that some of the charm of this too, for everybody out there, me and Wizard's friendship is a very new friendship. We have only known each other for, I want to say, about 5 months. Like it hasn't been that long. We became fast friends
Yeah.
through Twitter. Some good things come from Twitter. Through Twitter, and now we're doing a podcast together. So it's not only just like the TTRPG stuff. You're also watching two people like become friends, you know what I mean? So
Yeah.
it's kind of cool. It's like a weird experiment in
No, actually,
socialism. Not
that's a good
socialism.
way of putting it.
That's the wrong word. I use social, not so like social situations. All
Yeah.
right.
In society. Yeah.
So what
So
game are we doing today? But now that we've
speaking
taken
of
5 minutes talking about nothing, what game
Oh,
are we talking about
this is gonna be
today,
one of
Wiz?
this is gonna be one of those shows. It we are going diving into Hero Kids.
I'm excited about this.
Yeah, so I want to give a little bit of backstory as to why I got interested in Hero Kids real quick before we dive too deep into it. Recently, I did a deep dive article and a lot of research on the TTRPG industry. And one of the things I was focusing on was various genres that were selling. And I noticed a really weird trend in family genre, and that was that it makes up a tiny percentage of the overall volume of a site like DriveThruRPG, where I got most of my data from. But the number of sales was six times that volume on a month-to-month ratio.
Wow.
Which led me to believe that family gaming was really being held back by a lack of authors. There wasn't a lot of people producing content out there. Hero Kids is one of the big names in that subgenre. And when we get into it here in a second, I think it's going to be pretty obvious as to why somebody put a lot of time into how to make a game really suitable for a younger audience and manageable for a younger audience.
Well, and Hero Kids, I am aware of this. Like, if you're a person who is into TTRPGs, you're aware of it because it's popped up as an advertisement on your Facebook page or your Twitter page or something. Like, it's popped up for me multiple times. And I've actually even considered purchasing it a couple of times and just decided not to. Mainly because I don't want to buy a game that my kid showed very small amounts of interest in actual tabletop role-playing games, which, you know, we talked about this. It's kind of a bummer to me, but at the same time, I'm a very firm, like, I don't want to force my kid to do anything they don't want to do sort of thing. Like, I mean, not nothing they want to do. Like, she's got to clean her room and stuff, people. But, like, I hate when, like, I'll meet, like, a nerdy family, and they'll be like, oh, I would never force them to do sports. And then they're forcing them to sit there and, you know, play D&D or do cosplay or do models or something, some of their nerdiness. And I'm like, that's I don't think you see that you're doing the exact same thing to the
kid. That's the cliche.
Yeah.
That's the cliche.
Yeah. So, like, I don't want to force her to do anything. Whatever she's interested in, that's what I'll support. But I've thought about this. This game looks really interesting. And you actually recommended, Stealth Plug number two. I also run a TTRPG company, a very small one, and you've recommended that we do a family game.
Yeah, like I said, I think the family gaming is most inhibited and hurt by the lack of writers in the industry producing content. But there is people out there wanting this content. They've already bought everything. The sales can't go up because the people that want to buy this stuff don't have new content to buy. This is a good time to jump into that industry. And I think if this is an industry for you, and, you know, I don't have kids. Otherwise, I would be considering writing in this industry. You need to know, I think, children in order to be able to write for children.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that life experience to be able to do that. But, like, someone like you who makes TTRPG games, who's got a kid, I'd say, you know, pick up Hero Kids. They're the big guy on the block on this genre. And read through it. Because I think honestly, it would be providing something that people want and kind of need. They want games to play with their kids.
Yeah.
There just aren't enough games out there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. The volume sales kind of throws me off. So tell me a little bit about the game.
Yeah, so it's rated for ages 4 to 10. Yeah.
4 years old.
Yeah.
How do they do that? You're not even really writing at that point.
Well, you know, that's kind of the interesting thing about this game. Like, it has a very easy and noticeable scaling levels. It actually makes a mention of difficulty.
Okay.
And it makes a mention in the game actually itself. Kids, like, just like their brains expand so quickly. Their minds expand so quickly between 4 and 10, you know, over that time, you can take this up to another level of difficulty very easily and very quickly. And that's really what they did. They have like a very basic, simple version that you read through first. Okay. And then every step after that doesn't really change anything you've already read. It just expands upon it in a very organic and natural way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think the thing that kind of blows my mind is the four, just because my kid's a little bit behind on reading and writing. But she's just now starting to pick up the reading part, which to me was the big, like, that was always the big, like, how do I get her in? Because she can't connect with her character sheet. Like, as a player, you connect with your character sheet. You connect with those statistics, no matter how simple or how complicated that character sheet is, whether it's super complicated like Palladium or super simple like Fate, you connect with that. That character sheet is the roadmap to what you're doing in the game. And like that was always a problem for her because she really couldn't read the character sheet to connect with anything. So that was actually the biggest, like, I think one of the biggest barriers for her. How do they, like, do they still have a character sheet?
They do. They have character cards, basically. It's a character sheet, but it's just smaller. All right. And the reason why it's so small is there's not a huge amount of content on there. Okay. Nuts and bolts, I can give you this rundown pretty quickly about what's on the character sheet and how it works. One big thing, one of the reasons why I think that you can give this to a kid that young that maybe it doesn't have the ability to read yet or is kind of like not really reading very quickly. There's a lot of pictures on here.
Okay.
So instead of having strength, there's a picture of a sword. Instead of having dexterity, there's a picture of a bow. And there's a picture of a shield, a picture of a heart. So it's very easy, a little bit easier for them to remember these visual cues.
Okay.
And then they have three special abilities. This is the only text that's really written on there other than the character's name. The first one is the basic attack or whatever the individual sort of class has.
Okay.
Then you have a special attack, and then you have a bonus ability. All heroes, which is what they're called in this game, have those three things. So there's only three things a kid has to remember.
Okay.
And if you tell that to the kid over and over again, I think it'll help with just them naturally being able to remember, okay, it's time for an attack. It's time for a special attack, which, you know, they all have special names. I'm looking at, like, the hunter right now, and it's Splitting Arrow. The kid's going to be able to remember Splitting Arrow if you say it to them, as opposed to necessarily reading it. And it's a very simple special attack. Your arrow splits, and you can attack two targets up to six squares away. So I think the just simplicity of this and being able to like compare that with, you know, most of this being like associated with pictures, and then just three things that are actually written on the card kind of sidesteps, you know, the really the challenges a really young child would have.
Yeah, the picture thing is really interesting. I like that. That would be very interesting for like much easier for Stella. When I was trying to come up with something family oriented, one of the things that I was thinking of doing was like poker chips instead of like stat points, so that you could see directly how many poker chips you have there. Like instead of a number like three or four that they might not understand right away, here's some poker chips. But I love the idea of the pictures in place of the stats, you know, because it would be much easier for a kid to be like, well, my sword is three, my bow is two. And that's really interesting. That is really interesting.
And here's the other thing. They use a dice pool system. So you get a certain number of dice for these different classes. Like for the hunter, again, is a bow fighting character. Okay. They have two dice in their bow and one dice in their armor. And they're actually pictures of little dices, and they're just D6s.
Okay. All right. So it's an amount of D6s then that they're always rolling.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And so they just have to count instead of really add.
Yeah. My question is, is there a two-hit number? Like, how do they do difficulty and contested rolls and stuff like that? Is it just the amount on the dice? So if I've got two bow dice and I'm rolling two dice and I get, like, a five, like, what's good, what's bad?
So when you're attacking an enemy, you have a certain number of dice for your character. You roll that dice for whatever maneuver you're trying to do. The character, like if you're trying to just do a basic attack, will roll a defensive roll. And if your highest dice number, single dice, your highest number beats their highest number, then your attack counts and you add up the rest of the dice for your damage. If your highest number, single dice number, is lower than their defensive number, then you do not hit. It's a miss.
Okay. That's interesting. So it's kind of a roll keep one sort of situation, and just the highest. It's almost like you're constantly rolling advantage, and just your other rolls count as your damage.
Exactly. Yeah, very much. Very much.
Okay. All right. Kind of like Risk.
Yeah. Definitely more along in those lines. The other thing to note is how damage is distributed. There's only 3 health points. It basically goes on the degree of damage they have it listed as. Hurt, bruised, and KO.
Okay.
And obviously it's going higher and higher to being knocked out. Every time you take a hit, you basically automatically lose one of those health points. Now, the other dice that you're rolling, like let's say you're rolling 3 dice for your attack, that's to give you better odds at beating the other person's attack.
Okay. All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very interesting. That does keep it simple. I am finding it interesting that I'm already coming up with nitpicks for this system just based on your explanation of it. But that is interesting. I think that's really cool. I did want to ask you, did you ever get to the... I don't know if you talked about this on podcast or not. I can't remember if you defined this on podcast or not as the thing.
I think we did talk about it. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Me playing this with my friend and her brother, who has some challenges, developmental challenges.
Has some developmental challenges. And I just was wondering if you had actually tried this with...
I haven't yet. They're unfortunately traveling right now. But when they get back, I'm pretty sure we're going to get together pretty quick. I bought him the physical book.
Okay.
And I gave it to his sister so she could read through it. And hopefully her husband and I will be able to try to find a good area that he feels comfortable in and he'll be able to have a good adventure with.
I find, I really want to hear how that experience goes. Like, I'm really interested to hear how that works. As far as the system goes, I do have some quick other questions. Number one, so, like, you only have 3 damage levels, right?
Yes.
But you're adding up that extra damage. So, like, you're talking about potentially killing somebody in a blow, right? Or, like, knocking him down or whatever.
No, so you're not adding up that extra damage. You're not adding damage to him. It's just the extra dice is to give you better odds at beating your opponent's rolls.
Okay, so how do you do damage then? Is it just 1 damage per hit?
Yes.
Okay, so period. Is there any sort of, like, equipment additions or modifications or anything like that?
Yes, once you get to higher levels. Basically, what we talked about right now is, like, most basic.
That's version. 4. That's just 4. That's the base 4 level. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I want to hear about the scaling.
Okay, so the next level up, it basically, don't really give you necessarily levels. It's just every time they expand it, they'll mention, this is a little bit more advanced. And so as you read the book, you just get more and more advanced rules that you would convey to your kids as they get older and are able to handle that stuff. So let's take a look.
So it's not right broken down into, they're four, this is the version you play. They're five, this is the version you play. It's just there's advanced rules kind of sparsely slapped throughout the book.
Yeah, they do kind of make mention a little bit of it. They call it something like, the first level is just, you know, combat, basically. You just go in there and you are running through a forest and you encounter a bear kind of thing. That session is probably only going to last like maybe 20 minutes, which is probably good for a 4-year-old.
Yeah.
And then the next session, the next sort of rule set, I think they call it adventuring. So they do have a name for these different levels as they go up, but they don't necessarily define it by age because, you know, kids develop at different ages and whatnot.
Yeah.
It's just, it makes the game bigger every time they have another one of these sort of categories that you can do in it.
Okay.
And then there's exploration also. And as far as, like, you were asking about equipment,
mm-hmm.
As you get more advanced, you do get equipment like health potions, I think different types of just pieces of equipment that will help you with performing certain actions, like, in the world, like rope. You know, every adventurer needs to have rope, right?
Right, yeah.
And stuff like that starts to get assimilated into the game as you go through the book, and it sort of advances on a little bit.
So let me ask you this, because the numbers you're dealing with, and rightfully so because it's a game for kids, the numbers you're dealing with, and this is something I've always had a hard time with when I've been creating games, is I love it when it's very simple and the numbers are very low, but you run into this part where you only have 6 points of variation. Because right. you're dealing with a dice D6, you're not adding anything together. So you're talking about 6 points of variation. So, like, even if you had a piece of armor that gave you +2, that's huge. That's a third of your dice roll. How do they handle that kind of thing? Like, how do they, like, make it so that it's, like, everything you get is an OP?
So, So back to like how the dice work in this, mm-hmm. Dice values don't number like matter themselves when you're playing with the dice. What matters is you have better odds at beating your opponent's ultimate number.
Right.
And so your opponent, you have like a sword for, you know, melee attacks. You also have a shield for defense. And that also has a certain number of dice that you can put into your character, or these classes have a certain number already built into the character. They have cards with them already set up. But the monsters also have defense.
Right.
So let's say you're a warrior going up against a giant snake, right? The giant snake's going to have maybe 1d6 in defense, where your warrior has a shield, has 2d6 in defense. When you roll for your 2d6 for attack, and they have 1d6 for defense, you have much better odds at beating their 1d6 with your 2d6.
So you're saying that the equipment just add entire dice to the,
yes.
the pool?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty nifty. So you're basically just adding advantages, advantage, advantage from D&D. For anybody out there who doesn't know D&D, and this is coming from a player who hates D&D, but this is one system of D&D that I absolutely love. The minute they put in, it's one of my all-time favorite like systems they've put in. And actually, in single mod, there's a couple of things that I stole advantage for. And advantage is basically like if you, for some reason, have advantage over your opponent, you would roll 2d20s and just keep the better roll. And then I think disadvantage, you roll 2d20 and keep the lower roll, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Love that. I've always loved that. It's a great system, great thing they added. So basically that's what this is. You're just adding d6. You're just adding advantages, but on a d6 scale. So, like, if I am a warrior with a 2-sword naturally, and I find a sword that potentially adds another 2-sword, now I'm rolling 4d6 and keeping the best.
Exactly, yeah.
But I'm only ever doing 1 damage.
Yes, yeah.
That's really
exactly
interesting. That is really interesting.
And so numbers always stay low. It's always just counting out, figuring out what your highest dice is, figuring out what their highest dice is, and who has the highest dice.
You know what's even crazier is you don't even have to have stats on the sheet then. As long as you have enough D6s, you could just be like, put the D6s next to your strength. Put the D6s next to your... You could even have different colored ones. My red D6s are my strength. My green D6s are my bow. My blue D6s are my whatever else, you know?
Yeah.
My defense. I do have a question for you, though. What do they do for charisma-based stuff? Like if I'm trying to lie to somebody or deceive somebody, I mean, I don't know that you want to teach that to a child, but still, most systems have to cover a social aspect. Does this touch social aspects at all?
It does at more advanced levels. There is more the adventuring level where you are going to be interacting with NPCs, or your kid will be.
Right.
You'll probably be the NPC because you're the grown up. But when you're trying to do stuff like that, there's another stat in there for intelligence. Intelligence is also what the spellcasters use for attack and their abilities.
Oh, okay. All right, so intelligence is also your catch-all for social skills then?
It's going to be, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
All right.
Persuasion, I'm actually looking at the skills right now for intelligence. It's insights, knowledge, monsters, which I think is like, you know about monsters, you know what their weaknesses are and their strengths are. Perception, persuasion, and tracking. Those all fall into the insight skill.
You're talking about skills now, and we haven't even gotten into that. That's, I'm assuming another advancement. How do skills work?
So they're all paired to your attributes, which is going to be the standard attributes of strength, dexterity, and all that stuff. But like I said, instead of having strength written on the character sheet, strength is represented by a sword. Dexterity is represented by the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligence, I think, is represented by like a magical plume, basically.
Right.
And then, of course, armor is shield, and then a health.
They missed the opportunity. It's a light bulb. Intelligence is always a light bulb.
I know.
Huh? How do you not?
The idea, man.
It's a light bulb above your head. It always is.
And again, that is getting more into the advanced stuff.
Right. Right.
I
mean, I figured we could just progress through the advanced stuff because I'm very interested in this. I like, how do you determine your skills? How do you create a character?
So there's two ways. They give you a already built character, essentially.
Okay.
Like, go down to the character sheets that are already built. And they're essentially, they operate as classes, like just player classes that are already built. At this simple, though, level, you don't really have any optimization. You don't roll for anything. You just get a card, and you got your stats on it. And your stats is literally, like, for the hunter, it is two little dice, D6 dice, right next to his bow. So he has two dice for his bow and for all of his dexterity skills. For the warlocks... there are two little dice next to the intelligence and one dice next to the shield. So two for their spellcasting and intelligence skill checks and one for their shield. And there's two different warlocks here. One with fire, one with ice. The special ability that they have is a little bit different based on the type of magic they're using.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Can you have zero in attributes?
Yes. So
really? What happens
you do
then?
Roll, you always, whenever you try anything, you roll 1d6.
Okay.
And then you can add your attribute dice if you have attributes appropriate.
So if you've got a 2 in bows, you're actually rolling 3 dice to start.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I got it. So that makes the character sheets even easier because there's numbers that aren't even there. Like if you don't have a, okay, all right. So with the skills, let's say I'm adding skills in to my system, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do I differentiate? Are they just like level with whatever it is? And what do they have? Am I only rolling them? So like, Let me put an example out there. Let's say monster. I'm trying to figure out if a monster is a monster, and I've got the monster skill, right? And I got a 2 in the monster skill and a 2 in intelligence. Am I rolling 4 dice or 5 dice then?
So no. So what it is you're rolling the monster skill is going to be part of your intelligence, which means you can now use your intelligence dice to when you're rolling to try to figure out what the monster is. If you don't have anything in intelligence, you can still roll, try to figure it out and just roll your 1d6 because you always get 1d6 for trying.
Right.
But if you have a intelligence, as if you have dice in your intelligence attribute, then you can also roll those. And those skills are more like those list of skills are more just things that you can tell your kid that this is what intelligence does, as opposed to giving you any extra benefits.
I see. So it's more like a list of what you can do than actually like a build, so to speak.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
And so like anybody who has dice in intelligence will be rolling for insight, knowledge, monsters, perception, and putting their extra intelligence dice into that.
I see. So it's really the whole game is those three stats, no matter what. Like even the skills are more like, well, these are what the skills are, but you're still, it's just those three stats is what you're using ever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Let's see. What was the other big thing about this one? So yeah, that's the, and then you know you have your special skills, which is going to be the basic melee attack, the special action, which all of these different classes have a stack of special actions. Like the warrior can split his melee attack between two monsters if they're both standing next to him. One scares where next to him. And then a bonus ability on the warrior, when the target is engaged, and you attack that target, you can add an extra dice to your attack roll.
Okay. All right. Cool. This is,
and that's it?
Yeah, this is really interesting. Like, that's really interesting. I like the equipment add. I like the fact that basically the entire system is the advantage system from D&D. Like, that's basically it. It boils down to that. It's just how many advantages you get on a D6 and making it simple. Honestly, just talking it through, you actually silenced some of the nitpicks I was going to come at it with, to be honest, because...
Just going through this?
Yeah, just going through it, I was like, oh, okay, now that I see that's that kind of makes sense, and I'm all right with it. I still have one thing I'd love to see added to the game, but I don't... Are we ready for nitpicks, or do you have more to say about the system?
That's what's the big thing. There's a couple of other things that are kind of interesting that they do put in the system that you get when you buy the game. Mm-hmm. They give you little cards that have a little foldable bottom, and they give you maps. So you can...
I was just going to ask you, is it a map game?
It is. It doesn't have to be, but it does have maps when you go into the more adventure mode stuff. And then,
honestly,
you know, you have these little paper tokens.
Honestly, I'd reverse that. Well, I'll save it for the nitpick section.
Yeah, I was thinking about you when I was coming up. I was like, map, yep. Let's talk about maps.
We're going to talk about the maps.
The maps are a little bit of a nitpick for me as well, actually. But, so there's maps. You know, when you boil down the... statistics this way, this easily, with this kind of math, if you're thinking, hey, I want to try to design a TTRPG from scratch, I would read this book first.
Yeah.
Because it's so simple, and the ideas behind the build of this game are going to just be bigger in any other game you play. There's going to be more rules. There's going to be all this other stuff. But the math and the design qualities of it are, that's just like layers on top of this base level. Does that make sense?
Yes. There was a game. So just so everybody knows, I have been doing homebrews. I'm 41. I've been doing homebrews since I was 12. They're not good. That's why we're not selling them. But at one point, people wanted me to do a Dragon Ball Z game. Me and my friends were very into Dragon Ball Z. What teenage boy wasn't back in the 90s, early 2000s? So the thing is here's the trick to it, though, is Dragon Ball Z has this problem. A leveling problem. It's the same problem that I have with D&D. One of the many problems I have in D&D, is you get to level 20, your character's too big. He's too big, you can't do anything with him anymore, you know? With Dragon Ball Z, it's the same thing. Like, how do you continually... Because all Dragon Ball Z is about, when you look at the core, is about your character becoming stronger. That's it. That's the whole essence of that game. That's it. That's the boil down to that, is one character needs to become stronger faster, then the bad guy can destroy the world. And then once you defeat them, another bad guy comes around that you have to become stronger than to fight to save the world. Like, that's Dragon Ball Z. And honestly, a lot of those animes, Bleach, Naruto, a lot of them, they have some definite variations on them. I really like the tricky stuff when they get into that, instead of just the supercharging and punching each other until the guy who's not quite as strong falls down. Right. You know, with Bleach and Naruto, they tended to get into kind of these, like, trump card trick things, like, oh, well, my ability makes it so that you can't see, and you've got to find a way to fight me without seeing, you know. Stuff like that. Yeah. But it still boils down to that. I have to become stronger than X so that X doesn't wipe out Y. And then once I defeat X, Z comes along and I have to become stronger than Z. To do that, though, you have this problem where, like, if you start at, like, 100 power level and you want your goal to be 2 million, how do you do that in a system? The system that I did was this tier-based D6 system where... you had a basic stat, and then you had a couple of stats off of that. The basic stat couldn't be touched. The other stats that were off of it, the basic stat was always the average of those stats. So, and that basic stat told you how many dice you were rolling against your other stats, and you're trying to roll low. So you start with really low numbers, and you get really high numbers, and every time you bump up a tier, you're rolling another dice. So what happens is you could still fight the tier below you, but the tier below you, you would have to roll two dice against their one dice. You see what I'm saying? So it's always scaling in a way that you're stronger, but you don't necessarily, like, there's no cap, right?
Yeah.
That system is not as good as this system. The fact that you could constantly be adding dice to the pool doesn't matter, because the only thing you could potentially roll is a 6. All you're doing is giving yourself a better chance to roll a 6. So it makes you feel like you're accomplishing something. And you kind of are, but at the same time, you're really not. The variable is always 1 through 6. You're just adding more percentage that you're going to get that 1 through 6, but you're never guaranteeing it. And by never guaranteeing it, there is no cap to the amount of leveling you could do. I mean, it'll get ridiculous at some point. You'll have, like, you know, 37d6, and that's no longer fun. But at the same time, even with 37d6, probability might not roll a 6, you know? So this system has that infinite skyline, which is really interesting to me. I think it's one of the things that I like the most about this after coming to understand what it is.
So you're my friend.
Uh-oh.
And when we get into nitpicks...
Whenever somebody says that, I get ready for nitpicks.
I feel bad because I'm going to ruin this for you.
Uh-oh. Okay. All right. Let's get into nitpicks. For me.
All right. So nitpick... biggest nitpick I have of this game is, though, you know, I love how it stacks in how complex it becomes. It never gains an ability to level up a character.
Really?
Well, yeah. There's no leveling system.
What? Oh, wait. So there's no advancement system whatsoever?
No.
So, like, once your character... So, that does ruin
Once your character is made, your character is made.
Because literally I just said the yeah. advancement would be...
Yeah, and that's why I felt bad.
God, that's so weird. That's such a...
That's my biggest problem for my game, for this game.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you on that. Okay.
And you know, the thing is, like, I think the leveling system is not going to be for a four-year-old, maybe not a right. six-year-old. I don't have kids, so I don't know where that's going to be.
Yeah, a 10-year-old's going to want to level. I'll tell you that right
yeah.
now. My 7-year-old wants to level. I get that. I think, okay, so this is tricky. I'm really conflicted on this, now that you've said this, because, A, I am on the record as hating advancement in role-playing games. Advancement in role-playing games only ever leads to you not being able to play the character anymore.
Yeah, okay.
Like, unless you do it in a way that it caps, it only ever leads to you not being able to play that game anymore with that character. Which... In a way, I kind of get that's the natural, like, you have a character, you play the character through their adventuring life, then you retire them. Okay. But, like, at the same time, I don't necessarily want to give up my fucking character. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I like this character. I don't want to stop playing him. I hate that, like, advancement in game... Plus, advancement leads to something that I absolutely hate in games. And, unfortunately... A lot of people play games for this. I think even Philbilly really enjoys this section of the game. I know where you're getting from. And Philbilly's a good role player. I'm not knocking Philbilly at all. He's a very good role player. But he enjoys the building aspect and the numbers aspect. My problem is, most of the time, it leads to a greed of statistic rather than a greed of good role playing. You know what I mean? It leads to this weird... It naturally... leads the player, because you're a player. You're not the character. You're a player. And
right.
And any mechanism in the game that keeps you from becoming that character makes you more... It's going to make your character not feel as real to you, even though you
right.
don't realize that's what's happening. So you end up with this thing like, especially with D&D, where you get experience points from killing monsters. That drives me fucking nuts. That's the dumbest fucking advancement system ever. And I'm on record. D&D listeners, come at me. It's the stupidest advancement system ever, because that means that I just go out and kill goblins over and over again and I just like become smarter. That's insane. Leveling should always be based on role-playing, thoughtful role-playing, thoughtful in-game progression, like, and role-playing. The only way you become stronger is you should become stronger. It shouldn't be like, I've killed 14 goblins today, my muscles become bigger. That's not how that works. Like, you should be like, I train, I do push-ups, I train, I go see a swami to learn a better way to fight with an axe, you know? I go to see this guy, he's gonna teach me this skill. Like, that's how leveling should be. It should be actual character development. Like, your character should be figuring out how to do shit. That's what the advancement should be. But even in those cases, it leads you to, like, sacrifice real role-playing to try and get numbers higher. You know what I mean? So I'm conflicted here because this doesn't have an advancement. So this never really, like... So part of me is like, good, it shouldn't have an advancement. But,
right.
But, and this is key, the one thing about role-playing... The other thing is that, and I'm sorry I'm on a really long rant right now, just bear with me. The other thing about role-playing is it's a power fantasy. It's a power fantasy for the player. It's you being able to do something to play in a world that you can't normally play in. It's you
right.
being able to do something you normally can't do. That's the point of it. And the reward of that is your numbers get higher, which makes a piece of your brain drop dopamine. That's just how that works. You see your numbers go up, you get happier. That's just it. Maybe it's getting equipment. Maybe it's, you know, leveling up your character. Like, you get those rewards. So I think it's overall not good that you're not rewarding the players here. Like, that's one of the most... That's one of the most quintessential things about role-playing games is feeling the reward when you accomplish something. And, like, you still gotta feel that reward. You still gotta level up here and there. You still gotta find a way to get better. I would have liked it a little bit better if they had had an advancement system, but they had pushed the kind of, like, your character has to do a certain thing to become better. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Which would actually instill in the kids a little bit more of, like, I have to do this to become better. I can't just, like... Yeah. Magically press a button and become better. That would be really nice. They should definitely have something like that where they're like, oh, you can advance, but your character literally has to go train. You have to go practice with your character. That would be a really cool lesson to teach the kids. So that's it is a missed opportunity, you know? So, like, there is a part of me that really wants to be for this because I hate advancement in gaming. But, like, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think overall, you need to... That's a quintessential part of the role-playing experience, is the reward, you know, at the end.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be any real rewards here. Honestly, even with your character getting equipment, you're only getting more dice to potentially roll that six, you know?
Yeah, and basically, yeah. The reward is, like, the best thing that you're going to have as a reward is beating the bad guy.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a character-centered reward. The individual character is not going to really get anything. There's not even really, like, a money system in this game, which, again, I'm a little bit more relaxed on the money system. Mostly because, like, I know that a 6-year-old might start getting a little overwhelmed with everything else going on. If we start putting too much stuff in it. A 10-year-old, though? Well, that's a great time to teach a money system to a 10-year-old.
I'm going to tell you something right now. This is from the battlefield of parenthood. In the year of our Lord 2023, it is insanely impossible to teach a child the value of money. How much cash do you have in your wallet right now?
Oh, me?
Yeah. You got a lot of cash. You don't have to tell me a number.
Actual cash is probably just like $2 or $3 that don't keep cash on my pocket.
Yeah. Do you know how much cash I have in my pocket or have had in my pocket for the last 3 months? My kid sees me take a card, put it in a machine, and then she gets the thing she wants. She does not understand the money aspect at all, and it's very hard to teach it. When I was a kid, I acquired money, and then I could take that money to acquire things. I saw the money come to me, and then I saw the money leave me to get things. It was very simple, it was very easy, and while I understand the whole credit thing, and like the whole, like, this is a better way of doing things on the whole, because you can't steal the money, yada, yada, yada.
But
for a kid, she doesn't see the money. And even when you show her a bank account, like, it's hard for her to connect that. There's just numbers on a screen, and then... You know what I mean? And then there's
I never thought about that.
No. We have tried so many things to teach her money. She's starting to learn it a little bit, but we've had to, like, take her to garage sales and take her to flea markets and stuff where cash is it. And we make sure we give her a bunch of cash ahead of time for doing something so that she sees that she did something. And she does get cash from relatives and stuff like that. And then we take her to these places where she can spend the cash, and then she gets to see herself spending cash. So she started to learn it. But she's 7, and, like, daddy just goes to the store. She calls it the money store. She just says, like, oh, just get more money from the money store. There's no money store, kid. So, this kind of thing, they should really have money in there. Like, really have money.
Yeah.
I kind of understand why they don't. But at the same time, if you really want to help kids develop, put fucking money in this game. Like, make it so that they have to spend a certain amount of gold crowns to get the sword they want. Because
right.
that kind of stuff is really hard to teach to a kid nowadays.
Now, one thing I will go ahead and say, I'm sort of pleading a degree of ignorance here. I picked up the book to start the game.
Right.
It comes with a lot of content. There is a metric crap ton of
extra stuff.
Other content for Hero Kids. It's not just this one thing. Maybe there is a more advanced book out there that has a money system in it.
Right.
It just doesn't come with a basically starter book with all the basic rules.
Well, and I get that. You wouldn't want to, because then you'd have to stick a bunch of base level equipment in there and all sorts of stuff that you could buy. So I kind of get where they're coming from. But yeah, that's a teachable moment that they're missing out on. Because I know money is the root of all evil, but you still, at least in America, need it to survive. And if the kids don't understand the value of it, it makes life really hard. So I'm going to give my nitpick real quick. And this is a tough nitpick because I don't really think they're doing anything wrong. It's just something that I think that they could find a way to improve on. And should I ever do a family game, I'm going to make sure that this is in it. One of the biggest problems I had. So there's only one game that I've ever gotten Stella to be able to be into for more than one session for a long period of time. And it's a game called Four Against the Darkness, which it's supposed to be a solo game where you play a group of adventurers and you procedurally generate a dungeon, okay?
Okay.
But I allowed her to kind of like lead and tell everybody what they're doing, but it's still like a procedural generation thing.
Okay.
Here's one of the big reasons that that's the only game I could get her to play, because whenever I played a role-playing game or tried to sit down to play a role-playing game, I'm the game master, and I would have to play all the bad guys. And she did not like it when her dad would pretend to try and kill her. So, like, there would be all these aspects, or fighter, or kidnapper, or whatever. So she would really get upset that, like, it's me, but I'm pretending to be bad guys for her.
Okay.
There should be a way in this game so that it procedurally generates itself. So that, like whether it be a dice roll system and it gives you an idea of an event and then you work through it with the kid, but allow you to have a character with the kid so that you're going through the adventure together. Plus, that would really add to the imagination and creativity of the child, I think. I think the only thing that this is really lacking is it's very straightforward. It's not really helping them with imagination or anything because you're telling them everything. Whereas if you had some sort of like system where you were like, okay, in this scene, you know, we draw a card or we roll a die or something. In this scene where, it's an emotional scene. What do you think the emotional scene would be where we are? And then maybe, oh, there's a princess. Oh, there's a princess there. Well, maybe I'll say this to the princess. You know what I mean? Work through the scene together.
Yeah.
That seems to work a lot better with Stella. That's how we did the Four Against the Darkness, and she really enjoyed that because the bad guys weren't me. They were just bad guys.
Yeah.
You know? And then I could say, well, this is what the troll's going to say, because she knew I was next to her in the game doing it. You know what I mean? But like with this, it kind of puts one parent as the game master. Stella was never okay with that. Like, that's Stella's biggest issue. Is like, she doesn't want her dad to be the troll that's trying to eat her. She wants
So here's just an idea, and I'm not a dad, so just listening to you talk, I just had an idea about that, and you tell me how off this idea is. So a couple of things, like, you can have NPCs run with your kid's character.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have a map system with little card tokens with, like, a giant snake, or the Rat King, I think, is the adventure that came with this book.
Uh-huh.
Do you think if there was more projection on, like, a little picture of the Rat King, the evil Rat King, that would help with that at all?
Maybe. I think the big thing is you need to write it up so that it feels like you're with them, not against them.
Okay.
That's the main goal. Is you really need to make them feel. And I'm not saying this is the same for all kids. Every kid, the other thing that I've come to understand from A, having my own kid, B, meeting her friends, and C, babysitting two other kids on a regular basis, is every kid's a snowflake. They're completely different. They're like, anything you think you learned with your kid is wrong when you meet the next kid. So like, the things that work for one don't work for another. Stella, when she was a baby, she slept through the night. She'd wake up once, you fed her, you changed her, you put her back to sleep, she slept. We never had problems with that. Never once had problems with that. But at the same time, she didn't talk till she was three. So, like, it's every kid has this different series of challenges. You know, you meet a different kid, that kid's punching everybody. But they have no problems talking, you know what I mean? Then you have another kid who maybe doesn't sleep through the night, who wakes up constantly, but they're not a picky eater. Like, every kid is completely different. Every kid is completely different. When you go to those classes, the baby classes, they basically show you every nightmare solution. You're going to get two of those. But you don't know what two you're going to get, okay? And those two are going to be
the two. That sounds like a TTRPG game.
It is. So, like, every kid's different. I knew a friend who did a lot of role-playing games with his two sons, and I know he game-mastered, and then his son started game-mastering for them. So I'm sure they didn't have any problems with it. For Stella specifically, it's very much like, I don't want to fight Daddy. So she doesn't want that. So the only way I've been able to do that is, like, make a character that's me in the game, so I'm alongside her, and then basically have a game that's kind of generating itself. So it doesn't feel like it's coming from me. It feels like it's coming from the game. You know what I mean? And then I can kind of say, because I'm kind of with her, I could say, look, this is what the troll's saying. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like I'm showing her instead of throwing it at her. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. The other small thing that I'll say before we move on to something else, the maps are backwards, man. If they don't do the maps, if they don't do the maps until later, that's insane. They should do the maps early because kids can't have a harder time picturing that shit in their heads. You should do the maps right off the bat. Like,
they
that's
do,
when
they
you
do,
do, the
do
maps.
That. Okay. They do the battle maps right off the bat.
Okay, all right. It sounded like the maps were for later, for advanced play, and I'm like, no.
They have battle maps for, like, moving around your character and that kind of thing. I think the more advanced play is going to be exploration maps kind of stuff.
Okay.
Like, are you going to go to the forest and stuff like that? And even then, it's not like you're moving a token in there. You kind of see the map and you're like, okay, I want to go in this direction. The GM is telling you what you see.
I see.
And then you find an encounter and you pull out the battle map.
I got you. That's interesting. All right. Well, do we have anything else to add to this? We're at 57 minutes. We have a good show in the bank now, I think.
I think we covered it. I think we covered the game, said what we liked about it, said what we didn't like about it, said what pretty much is all about. And yeah, I think we got it. I think we nailed it.
So is it it's my turn then for next week.
Yes.
I'm doing Four Against the Darkness. I've talked about it too much here. We're going to talk about it next time. And I think I have a PDF to send you, so you can at least look it over. But yeah, Four Against the Darkness. We'll do Four Against the Darkness for our next game.
Awesome.
And that will hit no buzzwords. This one will hit buzzwords. That one will be, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, that'll be that.
Okay. Okay, cool.
One last thing, guys, please send us your war stories. If you're listening to this, we have a YouTube show. Drop the comments from your war stories from your favorite RPGs. We'll read them on the show. We still haven't gotten any. You guys are watching and listening, though. We have some numbers. If you watch this, if you listen to this, and you're a role-playing gamer, put your war stories in the comments. Let's talk about it. Or just say hi. We'll read that out. I love to read comments. It's one of my favorite things to do. So hit us with your comments. Hit us with your war stories.
Should we do one last plug for what we got going on?
Yes.
All right. Why don't you go first, and I'll finish this out tonight.
Okay. Well, so plugs, Astral Drive. We just did episode 7. When you're listening to this, it'll have happened on Wednesday. Go check it out. It's really good. The game is just about there, and probably, I'm not setting a release date yet. We're probably looking at very early August. When I know for sure, that's when I set a release date, because I'm no fool, sir. And then a week, and then after this next week, Thursday, we're back. The Stump Gang's back with more Ninja Turtles, and this time I'm going to get the sound right. And we're starting a very heavily modified Trucking Turtles. Because after reading it all, I was like, oh, I have to change almost all of this. but I'm very excited to do it with Wizards Respite and Phil Billy 3-3-0.
Okay, cool. As of recording this, I have plans, and I'm doing exactly what you said that you don't do. So I'm going to be a little foolish here. I have plans to be dropping a new article on Saturday. Okay. I'm hoping to have it wrapped up by Thursday, so I'll know for sure by then. So Friday, which is when this airs, look forward to a new article dropping on the wizardsrespite.com. And yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, wizardsrespite.com. The link's in the description. I always put it in the description. Link's in the description. You can also join Old Man Gaming's Discord and talk to me directly. Wizard's in there, too. You can talk to him, too. We've still got other TTRPG stuff coming, too. Check out my Getting Over, please. Please. Maybe buy the game. It's only $4 on DriveThru Games. Getting Over. Check that out. So, yeah, I think we're done, man.
All right.